Welcome to Phoenix and Flame, my podcast about pushing through and transforming even when you feel like a pile of ash. I'm Dana Skaggs, a psychotherapist known as the Queen of Boundaries. If you are new to Phoenix and Flame, please subscribe so you will be notified of new episodes. Visit Dana Skaggs, DanaSkaggs.com. For a free quiz to discover how boundaries are impacting your life. This podcast is not intended as psychotherapy. If you are in crisis, please call 911 or contact your local crisis hotline. Well, as you've heard me say before, I absolutely adore podcasting because it gives me access to amazing, amazing people. And today, our guest is Nikki LaCroce, and she was raised in the suburbs of Philadelphia. Nikki made a long-awaited move to the West Coast in 2017. It wasn't long after that she realized relocating there was only one of the big changes that she needed to make. In early 2021, Nikki experienced what she now refers to as her personal Armageddon, as she left a decade-long abusive relationship and simultaneously was faced with the unexpected loss of her mother amidst the peak of the pandemic. Nikki, welcome to Phoenix and Flame.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. And just in the little bit that we had before you hit record, it's always so exciting when you hop on a podcast, especially when you are reversing things and you're now in the hot seat, that the conversation is like instant and it's right there and you don't have to sweat it. You know, it just makes all of it so much easier.
That's it. You know, and guys, before we get into more of Nikki's story, I was telling her, like, you know, like she said before we started recording, and really, I'm very picky who I have on my podcast because, to be honest, and I'm a very blunt person, I'm just going to say it. You know, I ain't got time for boring people. You know, I ain't got time for that. I don't want to have boring people on my podcast. I want to have people that I can connect with, that I feel like have a compelling story, and people that are willing to be real. People that are willing to go there and tell the truth and say what it's really like. Because Phoenix and Flame is about letting everyone know that we're all the same, that we are all crawling through crap a lot of the time, and learning that we're not alone, that other people are doing that too. And what does it feel like? I personally like to hear other people describe what it feels like when they're going through something hard, because then I'm thinking, shoo, it's not just me. And then learning what helped them. And so that was one of my compelling reasons of doing Phoenix and Flame, to reach out to people and say, you know what? You're not alone. You're not alone. We're all in this together. So I always want to have people that resonate with me and that are going to be real and tell their truth. And I feel like, Nikki, I feel like you're up to the challenge.
I like to believe so. I would say I really value the amount of transparency and authenticity that I come with. And that is the product of a lot of self-work. I think it's a benefit that we booked this right after I had a therapy session. Because I was like I am primed and ready to go there. But in general, I'm similar to you. I really value the vulnerability of the conversations, because that vulnerability is what's at the helm of all connection. And so many people, like you said, you know, I don't want boring people. I do intro calls for my show because I really want to like make sure that I feel like the dialogue is there, because in earlier points of my podcasting career, I made some concessions that I regret making because I thought that they would be beneficial. And first of all, they ended up not really being. And I also compromised sort of like my, let's say it was just out of integrity with what I was seeking. And it's not that the content was bad, but it was like, I kind of knew, and I ignored that knowing that what was coming out of the conversation wasn't really what I had hoped for. It felt too superficial. And so it's like, if there's one thing to know about me, it's that small talk is virtually non-existent. It's basically like, hi, how are you doing? And one of my best friends said this, it's like, I don't care about the weather. I want to know what your deepest trauma is.
Oh, that's hysterical. Yeah, just let me tell your deepest, darkest secrets. Let's start there, shall
yeah,
we?
Yeah, yeah. And then we can work so backwards. It's kinda like... Yeah, yeah, totally.
Well, it kind of reminds me when I'm doing psychotherapy sessions, you know, I'm listening to my patient talk, and then I'm waiting. I'm watching, and I'm kind of sitting there with them, and I'm going there, and I'm waiting for them to feel finally comfortable enough. And you could almost see them shedding the superficial stuff and really getting real. Like, and I have this, the voice inside go, okay, here we go.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Gonna, like I'm ready.
Now we're getting there. Now they finally feel comfortable doing that. So I just love to have this platform to, you know, to provide that comfort and to say, this is what we're doing. We're being honest. So I'm wondering, Nikki, if you could consider taking us back to 2017, and why you made such a big move. I mean, that was a big move that you made. And then what were the big changes that you needed to make at the time? And then we could just kind of like flow
yeah, that's
through
great.
All of that.
I think it's a great jumping off point because it was really a pivotal moment for me. So right before I had moved to Seattle, I had lost my job about 6 months prior. And I've been working in tech for most of my career. I always say to people I fell ass backwards into tech because I graduated at the peak of the recession with a film degree. And it was like, good luck with your life. And being in the States, I had this like visceral feeling of like, I need to have healthcare. Like, I don't want to have the feeling of like, I can't make any money, but also I don't have health insurance if like I get in a car accident on my 100-mile round trip commute to work, right? So there was this feeling of, I want that security net. So I made a lot of concessions early in my career to just sort of take the job that was there and bounced around to try to like make more money. And I took this one job that was super random, and it afforded me, honestly, a lot of great opportunities. I spent a lot of time in Greece at this job because they had a headquarter there. So it was like, that was such a beautiful, you know, way to spend my time and a place to spend my time. But the company was really toxic. The CEO was very, in retrospect, and I didn't have the words for it then, but he was absolutely a narcissist. And the thing that I ended up getting fired from that job. Because to be honest with you, I was checked out. Like, I'll take my ownership of that. But I also felt like he didn't know what he was doing, and he was like firing people left and right too. So it was a combination of things that happened. And so when I lost that job, my mom and one of my best friends both said to me, fight every urge you have right now to fix this right away. Like, give yourself a minute and just like figure out what you're going to do. It's okay for you to have unemployment for a period of time. If you, because I had just bought a house, I had just like traded in my car and like done all this stuff. I wasn't expecting to lose my job. And my ex at the time, we had just gotten married as well. And she wasn't really, I mean, in all of the ways really didn't live up to, I don't even want to say her potential because it could have been my imagined potential. And that's a story for a different part of the conversation or a later day. But like, she wasn't doing much to contribute. So all of that weight fell on me. And this opportunity came up about 6 months into my unemployment where I actually, this is probably important to mention. So between when I lost the job, I took what I called at the time like a spirit quest. And I drove on a solo road trip from Pennsylvania down to Florida. And I made some stops along the way, stayed with some friends, stayed some cities by myself. Cause I was like, I just need to like go, I need to go be, you know, I need to get, I was overworked. I was so drained from the environment that I was in. And what I didn't recognize was such a huge part of this too, was that I was really drained by the relationship that I was in. And so I say all of that because I then get this call one day from a recruiter at Amazon. And so having worked in tech, Amazon is definitely a company that if they're pursuing you, you're like, I'll entertain this, right? And what came with that was the opportunity to interview. I took it, got the job. I honestly didn't think I would. I was like, worst case scenario, free trip to Seattle. Great. And when I got the job and the salary was more than I'd ever made with a relocation package to get me out to the West Coast, like my entire life, all I wanted was to get to the West Coast. I thought it would be California. But you know, then there were like all these fires and things, and I was like, maybe not California. And so Seattle became this very, very important moment for me to kind of I don't want to say reinvent myself, but reestablish myself, because up until then, most of my life was lived in a place or within like a couple hour radius of places where everybody sort of knew who I was and this version of me that wasn't necessarily fully who I was or who I wanted to be. And so when I got to Seattle, and obviously like my ex came with me, you know, I was really hopeful. I was meeting new people and I felt really energized, knowing full well that like I'm not supposed to be in a corporate job. I don't want to really work at a company like Amazon, but it was one of those I need the juice to be worth the squeeze sort of moments where I'm like, it got me to the West Coast. It's giving me a salary that like is much more livable than what I've made in the past. And so I'll take this opportunity and run with it. But about a year into that job, I was so miserable and I was feeling a lot of the feelings I had when I was burnt out at the company prior and the companies prior to that. And so I started going to therapy because I was miserable at my job. And I'm like, I just like, I need something that gives me purpose. I can be good at this, but I don't care about this. And when you don't care about something, like it's very hard to be the best you can be at it. Like I would say I was a good product manager. Was I the best? No, because I didn't care. And as I'm saying that out loud, this is funny. I played soccer in high school and I had a coach that said to me, you're great because you're athletic. You'd be the best if you cared. And I'm like, but I don't, you know? And so it's interesting. This is the first time I've come to the moment of like, oh, like that's not the first time that happened, huh? Okay. So your therapeutic presence is just drawing it out of me. So yeah, that was like a really pivotal moment for me because I had gone to therapy very briefly before and without a lot of intention behind it other than honestly to try to convince myself that I think that I was in the right relationship, which was the wrong reason anyway. And so when I started going to therapy in Seattle, my therapist said to me after the consult, like, if you're going to do this, you're going to commit to going weekly. And I was like, well, I'd rather just like come when I feel like I need to have therapy. And she's like, no, like that's not, if you're going to work with me, that's not how this works. And I was like, oh, okay. And because I really wanted answers and to change and to find what I needed, I did commit to it. And that honestly was like really the catalyst for me finding the ground that I needed to learn enough about myself to understand that I was in an unhealthy relationship with myself, with my work, and with my spouse. So it was like very much sort of the first domino that fell. And then a lot of other events sort of came after that, that gave me a lot of clarity around where I needed to go.
Well, let me ask you this, Nikki. You mentioned commitment, and I think that is really crucial. It's been my experience that people have to reach what we call the pain threshold before they're willing to commit.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering for you, what was it that pushed you? Because most of us, to be honest, we can feel very uncomfortable and we don't like it. But, you know, the pain threshold says before we'll do the work of change. And make no mistake, change is work,
right?
And facing fear and all this kind of stuff, that before we're willing to do the work of change, the pain of staying the same has to be greater than the pain of change. And so people have to get pushed because we hover right under that threshold for so long and we're very uncomfortable, but we're not uncomfortable enough to commit to change. So I'm wondering, in your particular situation, what was it that pushed you over that pain threshold to commit to doing something that you really, you know, to your words, you just kind of wanted to kind of drop in whenever you were having like a hard moment or something.
Yeah.
And I get that. I understand that. But your therapist was like, no, that's not how this works. It does really require commitment, and not just a commitment of time, but a willingness to be vulnerable and show all the bits and parts and stuff that we keep all tucked away and may not even want to see ourselves. What was it for you that helped you like reach that pain threshold and make that commitment?
I love the question. And I also really appreciate you describing that pain threshold. And I don't know if you're similar to myself in this way and believe in divine timing, but I cannot explain to you how relevant this conversation is based on not just what I talked about in therapy, but what led me to talk about something in therapy yesterday, which was my wife always says, say the thing that you say, And it's that I would rather be uncomfortable in the near term for a shorter period of time than uncomfortable in perpetuity. Because I was living my life in a constant state of discomfort that you're describing. You know, like, I love the way you said it because it's so visual for me. It's like you're just under the threshold, right? And I had a friend, a guest who became a friend, say to me, "You left when you could," referring to my relationship. I feel that way about my tech career. I feel that way about leaving the East Coast, right? Like when the circumstances aligned and it felt like my lack of fulfillment, my lack of happiness, like that is making it's debilitating. It's making it so I'm not enjoying my life. And I find it unacceptable that I'm not able to enjoy my life. Now, it wasn't that cut and dry in the moment as it was happening, right? But there was something in me, and particularly around my work life, where I was like, I cannot keep doing this. Now, I will tell you, I stayed there for another 3 years. There were some golden handcuffs that made it real nice for me. And frankly, was really important because it paid for my divorce. So like there were benefits to staying in this job. But throughout that entire journey, I'm going to therapy at least once a week during what I described as my personal Armageddon, twice a week, and really focusing on the fact that I'm seeing the gains, right? Like we think about people going to the gym and being like, I'm going to the gym, I'm going consistently, I'm going to work out. And look, now this is like the before and after. I wish that we had that for therapy. I wish there was a tangible way to show the like before and after photo of you, like as you're starting therapy, yes, and the train wreck that we all are. And then like, this is where I am now. Now there's still a little bit of like, I weeble wobble on the tracks sometimes, but like, we're pretty good. We're pretty solid heading forward. And I think for me, it was, you know, I actually had this dialogue with my wife yesterday after hanging out with a friend saying, you know, it's frustrating. You think about like, why do people not go to therapy? Because like, we've both really been witness to the advantages of it. And there's a myriad of reasons that people won't go. But at the end of the day, if you distill all of those down, my belief is that it comes down to the fact that like, we don't want to, as you said, sort of face ourselves. If we have to face ourselves and we need to acknowledge the truth, then we need to actually change, or we sit with the discomfort of knowing that we need to change and we're not doing it, which honestly is sort of, you better cross that threshold. Otherwise, like this is just like permanent misery. And so I made a comment about how like, God, like I don't understand like why people won't just do the work. And then I said this, and I had to literally and figuratively look at myself in the mirror, because I said, it's sort of like when because I've had body image issues. I dealt with bulimia for a period of time when I was in high school and early college. And so there'll be times where I feel like very out of shape and I'm uncomfortable in my body and like none of my clothes fit the way I want them to. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so when I feel that way, like I won't look in the mirror. Like I can't handle it. I don't want to look in the mirror. And as I'm saying this to my wife in the car, I'm like, shit. Oh man. I was like, I'm sitting here begrudging people for like not going to therapy, not doing the work. Meanwhile, it's like, that's probably what every one of my friends that goes to the gym consistently thinks when I'm like miserable about myself, right? It's like, then go do the work, go commit to yourself, right? And so I think it's like very easy to see that there's a problem, whether that's physically, mentally, emotionally, and acknowledge that, but to actually sit with it, with that awareness, and then decide that you're going to take action to shift your mentality and change your life is a very different type of commitment. And so the consistency for me was what allowed me to commit and give myself the space and the time I needed to come to these revelations that I was unhappy in all these areas of my life.
Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing and so on point. You had brought up something from a video of yours that I watched that I was really attracted to, and I wanted to hear you talk more about it. You mentioned the intersection of mental health, gratitude, and connection. Mm. And I feel like that's really interesting. And there's a lot of research behind gratitude and these types of things. And you and I were talking earlier before we started recording about connecting, you know, and then we added a little bit more once the recording started about, you know, there's just certain people I have on my podcast that I have to feel connected. I have to feel like there's something between us that is a connection there. Otherwise, I feel it's just a waste of time.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
I just don't want to
I mean, because the desire, at least for me, and I think just based on the brief conversation we had about this, is like there it's sort of like going to therapy in the sense of like you're here with the intention of I don't want to say it's like there's this desired outcome because it, how you get there or what the ultimate like dialogue is not really the point. But it's if you have a show where you're wanting people, because I'm the same way with my show, where you want people to feel a sense of being seen and heard and understood, mm-hmm. that you are not alone, then you need people on the other side of the mic to be in that same mindset. And if all you have is somebody coming on to self-promote and talk about the thing that they do and not the life experience that led them to that, it diminishes, I think, the relatability. And it's not, because to me, it's those are two different types of conversations. I think you can get really great insights and advice and sometimes very actionable tips from the types of conversations we're having. Like that's, and I'm going to give one related to gratitude shortly. But that's not why I'm here, right? It's like the intent is to have a conversation, to expose people to either new ideas or expand on the thoughts that they already have. And the best feedback that I've gotten from people about my show is that when they walk away, if they've listened to it, or even if they're a guest, is that it really made them consider things that they hadn't considered before. And so now they're doing some more of that deep work on themselves, which nobody's going to tell you to do. And you don't just do that because somebody's demanded it of you. Like you do that because you're in a place where you're ready to evaluate that. And maybe it's not the pinnacle where you're like, I'm making this change today, but it's like those little seeds that get planted. And then now, you know, what has become gone from, you know, being a few seeds dashed here and there is now this like really robust, beautiful, thriving garden because you've sat with it and you've given space to it and you've watered it and you've, you know, picked the weeds out.
I love that. I love that so much. You know, there's something, one of the reasons why I was connected to you is because you had mentioned in part of your bio about struggling through a relationship with a narcissist.
Yeah.
And I don't mention this much, and I'm not going to go into it a lot right now, but my mother was one of those, and my relationship with her has been fraught with all kinds of things, manipulations and gaslighting and all kinds of fun stuff. And so I really have a heart for people who have had to weather those types of relationships. And I was wondering, for you and maybe for some listeners right now that might be in the throes of a relationship with a narcissist and they're feeling ass over elbows and they don't know what's going on because of the gaslighting, the manipulating and stuff. I was wondering if you had any words of wisdom or some experiences that you could share with them as they're walking that journey and maybe trying to find a light somewhere and feeling like they're in a dark room and like an escape room and they can't find the door.
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. And I appreciate you. Thank you for sharing that with me. I recognize how challenging it can be to have the parental dynamic like that because my best friend's mom is like just a raging narcissist. It's like the most textbook. And so it was interesting because she had been married to somebody who is an overt narcissist. Her mother's very clearly also. But then I was married to a covert narcissist, so I didn't understand a lot of it as it was happening. And when I met my ex, I was 21. She was, I was 23 and she was 31. And I feel like this was before the dialogue about narcissism was what it is. Like it wasn't. It was virtually non-existent. Gaslighting wasn't a thing we talked about. So I didn't understand love bombing, trauma bonding, gaslighting early in the relationship when if I had that information now and I knew, I feel like I would have been like, obviously that's what's happening right now. Maybe not. I'm an empath through and through. So I'm sure that there's still like, you know, those little holes that like somebody who's very manipulative can kind of tug at you and pull you into their sort of vortex. But to answer your questions, there's a couple of parts to this. One, I want to kind of loop back to the comment you made about gratitude, because something that was really important for me when I was in really challenging points in that relationship was I am an overthinker. I ruminate a lot. I have, I have historically ruminated a lot. It is so much better because I've done therapy and I've left the relationship with the narcissist. So I'm not constantly like, you know, in survival mode. But something that she had said to me was, gratitude and anxiety can't exist at the same time. So if you're feeling really anxious, just start naming things you're grateful for. And I think a lot of people think like, okay, well, I don't have anything to be grateful for. Like, what can I be grateful for? It's so hard to think of something. Okay, is the sun out today? Like, I'm grateful that the sun's out today. I'm grateful mm-hmm. that, you know, I have sunglasses. So like the sun's not beating in my eyes. I'm grateful that I have this chair to sit on. So I'm not sitting on the floor. And it gets you into this mindset of, okay, there are things that I can appreciate about my life. And what I hadn't even realized was the compound effect of that. And how much that probably influenced not only the way I was able to like survive in that relationship for the couple of years that followed as I was doing that, but even in the in and especially in the throes of losing my mom in the process of leaving this person, it was like I had to anchor on, I have all these people in my life who love me. I have a job where I'm, you know, I have some job security or whatever. I have these things that I can hold on to and see as moments or pieces of my life that are good, that bring me joy, that fulfill me, that make me feel safe. And I think when you're with somebody who's narcissistic or you're experiencing the results of narcissistic abuse in a different type of relationship, that it is so important because gratitude for me really helped me stay attached to a sense of self at a point when it had been so greatly reduced that one of my best friends after I left my ex said to me, like, you were like a corpse. And I was like, that's really bad to hear. But I also appreciate it because she said that as I was standing next to my now wife, being like, it's such a polar opposite experience that you're having. Like, she felt she could acknowledge it because it was obvious that that was so far removed from where I was now. Now, the impact is lasting. Like in literally the end of my therapy session today, I said, I was like, I have this feeling of like, I want to stop talking about her. I don't want to keep having like these feelings, but I also recognize that I'm not coming from this place of like aggressive resentment or just like so much pain from it. It's there's an objectivity to it that's come about. And one of the things, again, that my therapist said, I have to give her so much credit for like really helping me get to these places with what seemingly simple thoughts or questions were. But there was a moment where she said to me, like, the hardest part about leaving narcissistic abusive relationship with somebody is regaining your sense of self. And at that point, like, I hadn't even really understood how much I had lost it. This podcast kept me afloat. Like, my podcast kept me afloat for a really long time because I had all these other connections that were so important to me. And so like a narcissist is going to try to isolate you. And my ex did that in ways that were more subdued because I'm inherently a connector and like, you're not going to shut that down. Like, it's just not happening. Right. So it was more like keeping me distant or keeping me trapped, but I still had all these people who were telling me like their stories of resilience, their stories of leaving these toxic situations, of overcoming this adversity. And I'm like, so it's possible. So it's possible. So it's possible. Right. And so I think part of the value of a show like yours and the one that I do is that when you hear people who have been in your position saying like, I get it. I was there too. And I understand that it's not cut and dry. I understand that you can't always just up and leave because you want to. I understand that you'll try to leave several times before you actually get out, but you'll leave when you can, or you left when you could. And what I think is really important to remember is that you, as much as we have our own accountability in these relationships, like there is abuse there. And that is something that you deserve to be freed from and you deserve to heal from. And so when it came to regaining that sense of self, one of the things that I did was like, you know, I settled for a really bad relationship because I didn't love myself enough. And so for the first time in my life, I sat down and I was like, all right, what are like my wants, needs, deal breakers in a relationship? Like, let's do this. Not I just want somebody to love me, but like, what is it? The deal breakers were primarily things that would relate to my ex. And I was like, just hard no, never again. And then it was, okay, here's what I'd like to have, you know, in a partner in a relationship. And then it was like, what are my non-negotiables? And I think it's really important, especially if you recently left a narcissist, to do that exercise and ask yourself those questions. If you're in a relationship with a narcissist, ask yourself those questions. Or in a relationship where you're unhappy, doesn't even have to be a narcissist, right? Like, ask yourself if you're getting what you need and want. And also, if you're, a bunch of your deal breakers aren't currently deal breakers right now, even though like they would be, why are you abandoning yourself? Like, why are you letting your own boundaries be violated? You know, and I think that there's a lot of introspection that I encourage people to have. And it's not always easy when you're in the midst of it. So I understand that. But when you have the clarity, when you have the space, just little by little, give yourself the opportunity to explore those parts of you. Because when you're surrounded by people who, like a person who's narcissistic, their entire MO is basically to erode your self-trust. And you need to gain that back to be able to have the confidence you need to live your life more fully.
That's awesome. I'm loving so much of what you're saying and your contribution and your experience and your wisdom and your willingness to share. I also wanted to kind of pipe in and say, sometimes for people that have been raised in a narcissistic environment, sometimes they don't know they're being abused.
Yeah.
They don't understand about boundaries. They don't understand that there isn't being space made, because sometimes we use that word narcissist a lot, but basically in the nutshell, a narcissist is about him or herself.
Period, full stop.
That's it. That's it. Period, full stop. And anyone who's in a relationship with that person, if the relationship's going to be about that person. And because you said it, you lose yourself, because the relationship is always about that person. And when you've been raised in an environment that way, sometimes you don't realize that's what's going on.
I mean, I didn't realize when I was in it as the romantic relationship. And so I can only imagine, it's sort of like being the fish not knowing you're in the water, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. I mean, just as a little side note, I had to have somebody tell me that I was being emotionally abused. I was a full-on adult,
I mean,
with a degree in psychology, and didn't know
that's fascinating.
So I'm just saying.
No, but I think I think that's a really important point to make, Dana, because so a lot of the people that I know who have dealt with a narcissist, whether it's in a familial relationship or a romantic relationship or even friends, it's like it's very easy to, you know, from the outside looking in, observe it and call it out. But because of the nature of the abuse, narcissistic abuse is very insidious, even if it doesn't present that way. Like, my ex was always a victim. So like a covert narcissist is very, very, very like good. I mean, I think all narcissists are, but like there's sort of a bravado with an overt narcissist that like my ex didn't have. But it was like always about her trauma, which like, I'm like, I don't even know if it was real or not. You were living a double life as like somebody who was addicted to substances, you know, like there was a lot of stuff that didn't add up. And through and through, I'm justifying her behavior, feeling in my body that it's not right. But like, because I don't know enough about that abuse, I'm making exceptions. I'm cutting down my own boundaries. And to your point, it's like a lot of people from the outside can point it out to you, but you have to be in a place where you can accept it. And I've said this on a lot of podcasts where I've guested, because it was like the turning point moment for me. It was when one of my best friends from college said to me, "You're asking for the bare minimum and you're not even getting that." And I was like, well, I guess I really have to face that reality, don't I? Because it was like, I want more, I want more, I want more. And it's like, well, you're never going to get that. So what?
No. Nope.
Right? It was the most gentle way she could have said that.
That's it. You're not going to. So what are you going to do? So our time is about up, but I did want to ask you another question just to kind of wrap this. And I feel like, Nikki, I feel like you and I could probably talk for 2 more hours.
Oh, 100%.
Maybe I'll invite you back on and we'll go part two.
Yeah, I would love that. I'm happy to have you on my show as well. I think it would be a great conversation.
That'd be awesome, because I'm the queen of boundaries and there's a good reason why I'm known as that. Learn that the hard effing way. So
right, but don't most of us? I think a lot of us do.
Oh,
I want younger generations not to have to learn that way, but I think people who are, I would say like millennials upward, and maybe like late Gen Z, like I think boundaries are something that we have to now integrate into our life very consciously and intentionally. Whereas I think if we can raise children coming up in the world now to understand it, then it's less of the learning curve and more sort of just part of who you are and how you exist.
That's it. And keep that in mind when I ask you this next question. Okay. When you think about boundaries and how we came around that, and also the importance of releasing guilt and shame, because, you know, we can try to disengage ourselves from and detach ourselves from these narcissistic relationships, and we can try and we can even, you know, pretty well succeed, but then we're still left with this residual sludge, you know, this sliding around in there that just kind of comes every so often about, well, you know, but maybe I should have done this, or maybe I should still be doing that, or maybe I shouldn't have done that, or shame on me, or to be honest with you, Nikki, I was called all kinds of names. I was called a bitch. I was told I was hateful. I was told I was unforgiving and unkind, and all you name it. I've been called all these things for setting boundaries, and I had to work through all of that. It was something. So I'm interested in your take from your experience when you think about boundaries, and also how did you release the guilt and the shame? And especially for my listeners that, like I said, are still maybe in that path and still in the dark and still struggling with that and still get pulled back in because of the guilt and the shame.
Yeah, well, that's such a great question. It you're correct that it's very real. To be honest, I think that's the reclaiming the sense of self is challenging in a different way. I think that's the hardest part in terms of like your own self-actualization. But releasing the guilt and the shame is so essential. And the challenge that I faced was when I was leaving, like I'd made the decision to leave and then we lost my mom. And I thought, well, I might like need to lean on this person or something. She couldn't show up in the moment when I needed her the most. So it was a very clear no. I started feeling a lot of guilt and shame because like I lost time with my mom that I'm never going to get back, right? Like I missed opportunities with people that I won't have. I said no when I should have said yes. I kept myself in a situation that I could tell wasn't good for me. And I, in retrospect, look back and I'm like, why didn't you leave? Like, why didn't you just leave? But the thing that's important to remember is, first of all, when you're in an abusive situation, it takes, I think, an average of 7 times to leave. So like that's in and of itself says a lot about the power that abuse has over us. But it also speaks to the fact that, you know, the friend who said you left when you could was like, you probably like got there a couple of times, right? And you were like, I'm going. And what would happen in my life was every time I was like, my foot's out the door, something traumatic would happen and I would get sucked back in, to your point. And so I'm sitting here and I'm shaming myself about like, why did I stay? And it's like, because this person continued to manipulate me to believe that like the way that I, what, not even to believe that the way that I was, because there's the accountability to it, but it's like my low self-worth, my feeling that like in feeling needed, I felt wanted, dictated my staying in that relationship. This person needed me. I needed to be there for them. And when I was able to extract myself from the situation and be like, okay, she didn't need me for the purposes that I thought she needed me. She needed me to, as a resource. When you recognize, you know what it is? I'm sorry, because I feel like I'm like jumbling a little bit. There's so many things going on right now. I think it's that you have to be willing to sit with the discomfort of acknowledging that it's actually abuse to release the guilt and the shame. And you also have to be accountable for your part in not, I don't want to say not setting boundaries, because I tried really hard to set a lot of boundaries, but for not upholding your own boundaries, regardless of what the other person did. And so I think there's a lot of like grace that you have to be able to give yourself while also holding yourself accountable to navigate those feelings of guilt and shame, because you're not just going to be like, I don't feel guilty about it. I don't feel shame about it. Because what you're feeling is, at least for me, like looking at my past self and being like, I'm so sorry that I stayed so long. I'm so sorry that I put up with that. You know, I'm so sorry that I wasn't living in integrity with what was right for me, because I didn't have enough belief in my own self-worth to release myself from the situation. And that's really been what has helped me navigate through that, because I will never get that time back with my mom. I will, I think, to some degree, always have some sense of, I don't even know if it's guilt anymore. I think now it's sorrow. But this pain of knowing that I didn't have that. But at the end of the day, when you leave, I think that there's so much to be celebrated when you extract yourself from the situation, that eventually the scale sort of tips to, that's not as significant as my worth, or that's not as significant as the goodness that my life holds now, right? And so as you remove it further from your life, it's not that you're ignoring it. It's that you're allowing what was to be whatever it was, and know that, like, that's not your life anymore. And to be able to release that guilt and shame, you have to be able to be very present. And that's where gratitude again comes into play for me, is like, I can look at my life now and be like, look at everything that is right here, right now. It was absolutely terrible. I can't change that. But this life that I have now, this is the good life I get to live.
Oh, that's amazing. Amazing. Okay, Nikki, I know my listeners are going to want to be able to access you more and find out, oh my gosh, she's awesome. How do I get a hold of her? Where do I send them? Where do they go?
Perfect. Yes. So you can check out the podcast. It's called Can I Just Say? And you can get that wherever you listen to podcasts. I also have a website, canijustsaypodcast.com, where you can check out more content or reach out to me. And you can follow me on social at Nikki LaCroce, which you can put in the show notes, because I'm willing to bet most people won't spell it right.
I'm definitely going to put it in the show notes. Absolutely. I'm writing it down right now. Okay. All right, Nikki, I thank you so much for your time and your energy and your willingness to be vulnerable with myself and with my listeners and meeting me today. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dana. This was just so great. And you're absolutely right. We could talk for many more hours, and I look forward to keeping this connection going.
This is awesome. Listeners, I know you have heard so many things today that you're thinking, woohoo, I know a best friend. I know a relative. I know a coworker who absolutely needs to hear what Nikki has to say. Please take the episode and copy and paste it in text, copy and paste the link in email, put it on your favorite social media sites. Let's get it out there. Let's grow our Phoenix and Flame community so that we can know that we are all in this together. Nobody's alone. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. I'm Dana on Phoenix and Flame.